Mikey, Ben, the rest of the AR crew, light those candles, break open the bottle of wine, because...
this is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. You know, when I arrived in Iowa for Assembly Required, it was like in the 70s. It's Des Moines in November, so that's not unheard of, but it's still a little warm, right? It was beautiful. It was in the 70s. Was it Thursday morning, I think? Adam and I, we walked like 5 blocks to get coffee in like t-shirts, and he's wearing shorts and I'm in jeans. Before I woke up Friday, it started raining. You know, it rained until midday Saturday, and the temperature didn't never climbed above the 40s after that.
Welcome to the Order of Weather.
Yes, the Order of Weather Battle.
Cobra Commander's at it once again with the Weather Dominator, just fucking our lives up.
Damn it, Destro, can you not sell him a device that just hurts people, but, you know, at least in a pleasant way?
All right, so this year you drove to AR.
I did 3 stops. It only took me 9.5.
Hey, that's not bad.
Not bad at all.
Before we get too crazy in, I have been waiting to see pictures of your construction hiss tank.
You will not be seeing that. So, all right. We can just start with make fun of Jason time. That's fine. I am not known to be the best with schedules. When the Codename Iowa team dropped their Assembly Required packages, so Assembly Required is a free one-day show. However, they always have a couple extra things that if you want, you can purchase. And of course, I grabbed the all-in. So the all-in was a dinner, and it was also their gear kit. And you know how much I love the gear kits because I've done armor and armor 2. I've done the gear kits for AR. Their cardboard dioramas with some 3D printed things. There's stickers. There's file cards. There's calendars. There's just things that are really fun. And so, of course, I'm in. But this year, for the first time, they also had a vehicle customizing class, which I think is kind of cool. We've talked to Russell several times about his figure customizing, which I'd like to take. I've always been hesitant, but I think it'd be fun to take a customizing class. And so, dotted line, paid my money, I'm in. So, back to me being bad at schedules. Load in was Friday morning. It's 12:30 Friday afternoon. I'm walking the floor while all the vendors set up. I'm chatting. I'm helping where needed. And Chris Scott, who was supposed to be there but didn't show up, like you, he texts me and he says, "How's the customizing class coming?" "It starts at some point. I'm sure it'll be fine." And he responds with, "Jason, it started 3.5 hours ago." Surely that's not true. Let me go to the website and look up the schedule. Yeah, that was absolutely certainly true. The class ran from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's 12:30. I rush over to Aaron Ringer's booth. I buy a hiss tank because you needed a hiss tank to customize. And I saunter in 3.5 hours late. And I see my buddy Tim and some other people there. They're getting close to done. Because Kobe, AVAX Lab, who's running the customizing class, is talking to them about painting. Well, shit. So I quietly sit in the corner and I'm just watching. He kindly offers to help catch me up. And I say, no. I came in late. This is my fault. I'll take my little kit. I'll go home and I'll just try to do it. He was like, yeah, it's not designed like that. You really need to do that here. If it's screwed up, that's on me. I came in late. It's not on you. And my buddy Joel, not you, says, "Hey man, I came in like 10 minutes ago. He's going to catch me up too." Okay, so he catches Joel and I up. Everybody is finishing up and leaving. Some people paint, some don't. The class ends at 2, so at a little after 3 o'clock, he's not done catching us up and he needs to clean up the room. And he's just like, you know what? I'm going to take these home. I'm going to finish drilling all the holes so that you can put it together. Whatever, I'll mail them to you. So I have the blueprints for the crush, which is the construction hiss tank. And I have the stickers for it. So when it gets to me, I can sand it and paint it and I can put the stickers on it. But I do not have the hiss tank. It does look cool. I've saw several people finished it. Some left the hiss tank treads on it. Some put on wheels because the vehicle he used as a conversion kit is one of your favorite lines. Brooder.
So that's what I was going to ask. So I started this truly not knowing, but half teasing because you didn't send any photos and you sent a picture of everything. And I was like, I know he paid for that. But anyways, so I saw some of the pictures you had sent. I assumed they were Brooder, but I knew that the conversion kits were factory made.
Parts of it were.
That's what I'm saying. Like the parts that I recognized, I was like, those are certainly factory made. And there's a few brands that do construction vehicles and loosely the 118 to 116 scale. It's incredible that it's Brooder because the quality is outstanding.
Yes.
But also like, I'm kind of curious where he found X amount of those vehicles at an affordable price.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know if you've ever looked at AVAX Lab or Kobe's custom hiss tanks in the past. He is known for customizing hiss tanks with construction style vehicles.
I am moderately familiar with this.
I don't know what area of construction he comes from. He is clearly a capable person. He had all the tools out. He was hammering through. He was naming off things. He could tell by the glazed over look of Joel and I that he should probably do some of the precision work and then we can slap it together and paint it. Both of us were very much in the school of, please don't cost yourself extra time and effort. We will take these home. If they're screwed up, that's on us. He was in the school of, I want you to have a nice thing. So I will end up with a nice thing. It's going to be cool. It's going to be fun. But I do not have a picture today.
I love mixing in utility vehicles into my collection. But something that I love even more is the idea of a hiss tank frame, if you decided to ditch the treads, with the add-on construction equipment, because that is just so Cobra.
Yeah, it's just goofy enough that Cobra would do it. Well, the cool thing here is that Kobe also included 3D printed hard hat, head, and hand attachments for both a 4-inch and a 6-inch bat to make a construction bat.
Ugh.
Because what is more Cobra than a construction hiss? A construction bat.
I guess the only thing I could say is more Cobra is just like the human grunt side of it. saving the bats for combat and making the humans dig the trenches.
After how many issues of the comics where bats were just pushed out of helicopters and the ones that didn't break on landfall stood up and fought? It's kind of funny. I like it. You know, so for my 6-inch or for a 4-inch bat, I could put a hammer or a screwdriver or a drill arm.
That is incredible. I can't wait to see your finished product.
Yeah, it's so good. He's very fun to talk to, very sweet human, as well as if you like customizing, his 3D printed stuff, his resin stuff is all very cool for figures. I know a couple years ago, people were scooping up his Globulus parts to make 4-inch customs. He made a BET years ago before you could just go buy a 3D printed one now. And I've seen it and it's huge. He does a lot of custom stuff that's just fun. And so I was excited to take his class and an asshole for being 3.5 hours late.
All jokes aside, I can't imagine trying to track you down at AR because tracking you down is damn near impossible.
It is an intimate show. So it hits all the right buttons for me.
You know, I was chatting with you. I've chatted with Cav a little bit. I'm just very bummed. You know, very bummed. But,
you know, I had a great opportunity to sit down with Cav and have a little bit of a heart-to-heart chat, which is always a joy. Same thing with Russell. John and I didn't get a lot of time together. It was the first time he's been to AR. So, you know, all the same people that I'm that I like to talk to were grabbing time with him, because usually if you see him at a show, his booth is so busy that you don't get time to talk to John. It's just really that kind of show. At a certain point, this show very much became the jokes on Jason in a fun way. By Friday night, after dinner and everything else, everyone started to notice that every single new person that came into the show floor, the restaurant, the lobby, wherever we were, was, "Hey, Jason, where's A?" So then I was just randomly getting people who I had been hanging out with for hours walking up and being like, "Hey, where's A?" And then turning around and walking away from me.
"Where's A?"
So that became the weekend joke. You know, like I couldn't have a conversation without someone at least midpoint interrupting me to ask me where Alexander is. Which Alexander has taken no small joy in telling me that I was wrong for leaving him behind, and this is proof.
I understand, because there's a fine line of being the all-star parent and being the bad parent.
Oh, I am now just the chauffeur parent.
But it's hard to justify pulling a kid out of school for 5 days. And that's, again, now this is outside of A's mindset with what I'm saying. Like, there's a fine line between being the all-star parent and the what are you doing? So you're in a tough spot with AR. I will be here to say I get it. I might go against the grain of the masses and say, you know, like, life is full of tough decisions, and you made the best one, I think.
Well, I can tell you, it is certainly a show that he would enjoy, not just because of, like, product on the floor, right? So let's get to that. Everybody wants to know, what's the score? What's the loot? There was at least one, maybe two flags on the floor. There were three or four pterodromes. There were three Defiants. It is a show that Jody Classified shows up for, and shows up hard. Since this year, the theme was the 40th anniversary, and we were looking at 1982, they were showing up with some beautiful stuff. And they throw this amazing panel where Pat Stewart and Chris Murray go deep and go hard. They do it every year. It's always on theme. It's always incredible. Because of their panel this year, I come home and immediately buy a book that both of them recommended in the panel. And when I said, "Oh, I'd never heard about that book," they both looked at me and were like, "Really? Okay, well, I'm reading that book." So I'm currently reading Toy Wars. It came out in 1998, written by G. Wayne Miller. I've never read it before.
What's funny is I'm very familiar that the book exists. I don't own it, and I've never read it, but I know of the book.
Well, come on, book club buddy, let's go. So D-Class is always phenomenal there. Skeletron showed up. They even brought a new product. Ben posts a quick picture of it online, and a dozen people hit me up with, like, "What's Skeletron bring?" I don't know. Ben's not even here yet. He's still in the car. He posted a thing on Instagram. I am not on the team. As it turns out, it was a very cool fingerboard with the RoboSkull, with the Skeletron robot on the bottom, and it works perfectly with Classified G.I. Joe. A has been posing both Sergeant Slaughter and Tiger Force Outback with it all week. You mentioned Cav. Cav showed up, and he had a panel about the evolution of G.I. Joe in the modern era, 2006 to current. He also had a panel with David Allen talking about the G.I. Joe fan club, and he had a booth for the fan club where he was showing off the membership kit and had a few other things. Josh Egebine showed up with Hawk from Rising Sun Publishing, and they had a handful of Volume 2 of their After Action Report. Callsign Longbow showed up. They had their pre-production stuff out. They had some artwork out. Mark II Designs, which I don't know if you've ever messed with his stuff, but I've bought his factory weapon kits, A and B, and Alexander's played with them, put them in the hands of the Classified Joes. They're solid. They're stable. They work great. They're scaled well. That was where we brought home that 3D printed Motomaster from Toylana. That was from Mark. There's some great community creatives that are there, as well as all the vendors. You know what I mean? The product in the room was great. There was plenty of carded figures. There was plenty of vintage Joes loose. There was custom Joes. And then some of the vendors, they brought a little bit of everything, you know? So you could have bought pound puppies. The show, if you're showing up to purchase, I've had to, you know, bring a second bag when I fly. Although this year was mostly paper that I brought home.
Just the names you've rattled off, and not even from a vendor standpoint, but from the amount of like good and interesting and unique, truly wild product that shows up just within the G.I. Joe umbrella. You know, it's often talked about kind of just not at the forefront because AR is always sold as like, this is the friend show. This is the hangout show. So on the topic of call sign, I completed my backer kit. I have one of everything coming with a extra Spetsna.
GRU Spetsna, yes.
You know, I added one of the gear upgrade kits. I added, you know, the patch. I added the standard comic cover. I have one of everything they're producing, period.
Yeah, I drug my feet on finishing mine as well. As a friend to John and Troy, I felt bad for, like, dragging my feet. But as a wounded wallet soldier, I had to take my time. In the end, I didn't grab as much as I wanted to, but I still have three or four of everything coming. And once they have product in hand, I'll be able to buy from them at shows. So I can still get the amount I want. I just had to temper it a little bit this time.
That's how I've been kind of looking at. I went hard on RoboSkull. I went hard on the backer kit, but I did not quite hit where I want to be with a lot of those troopers. It's one of those things where I have to remind myself, like, I have everything that was exclusive. I have a huge box coming, and it's not like this is going to be a one and done. You know, O-ring stuff is, you know, not my main bag.
It could be. I'm trying.
But as I've said before, when it's something new, that gets me excited. You know, I have not opened any of the O-ring retro G.I. Joes. Not a single one. I can't wait to open these figures. In the random bits and bobs of like random O-ring stuff I have one of the 2000s reissues of a V1 Snake Eyes. So I don't need to open, you know, the 2022 version because I've held that mold in my hand. I have never held the mold of a Callsign Longbow figure.
True enough.
It was one of those things where I made up a few different carts.
So many carts.
But I, you know, as I said in the episode where I talked about having to miss the show, life has been a bit of a bastard to me in terms of finances. You know, it's life. It happens. It's not a sob story. It's just part of living. So
we all go through that season.
I mean, I've been trying to dial back a lot on every brand, including G.I. Joe. But specifically, you know, the wounded wallet was like, hey, fella, you're going to have to catch these guys after production or hit the pre-order store. You know, the window is never closed.
Right. And so speaking of the window is never closed, also going a little too hard and had a nice setup at AR. Have you gotten your aliens from Chicken Fried Toys?
No.
So he had at least one, so I got to mess with it a little bit. He also had some other stuff that I got to see. It's really, really, like, dude, Chicken Fried Toys, if you like modern 4-inch scale figures, god damn, man. I understand why you went hard when you found them.
I will say on the topic, I'm glad you brought up Chicken Fried Toys because I did get my in hand. I got my Spaghetti 6 pre-order.
Nice.
It showed up in a box with a Dime Novel Legend stamp on the side. You know I'm a sucker for that stuff.
You were dancing all the way from the front porch to the living room.
I took them all out. I did not uncard them yet. This particular wave is got some of their best deco work to date. They're so sharp. And I'm going to order a second wave because I, you know, that's who I am.
Well, it's not just who you are, but the quality demands it.
Yes. And It's the damn box. I want to order a second wave so I can keep the box sealed forever. You know, I am desperately waiting to get that email on the aliens because when he teased them a long time ago, And then after talking to him and after seeing, you know, not input drawings, but just like, here's the character drawing of what's coming. But seeing, you know, seeing all that. And then at Joe Fest, actually getting to see the test shots, whatever, you or, you know, factory samples, whatever you want to call them. Seeing them in hand, I was like, God damn.
Yeah, man.
And I'm really hoping. So if you're listening, I'm sure there'll be other people that are here. As a friend, as a collector, as a customer, you got to give us a chance to bulk buy the grays. Because I'm going to need another 10-pack to go with the greens.
Damn, son.
I can't wait. I saw some pictures of people who had purchased them at the show, posing them at the show, and look incredible. I can't wait. Let's talk the creator booths. So give me the rundown of Call Signs booth before we get too far away from that topic.
How about, well, let's take a step further back than that. Let's talk about the floor. So Hy-Vee Hall is a huge convention center, multiple floors, and it's in Des Moines, right? They're in the Snowbelt area. So there are skywalks between certain buildings. So there is a skywalk between the hotel, the Hilton that we stay in, and Hy-Vee Hall, which is great when I told you that it pissed rain for a day and a half and it was cold rain. Now, by the way, in years past, not a drop of rain. It's November though, right? Because it's raining, we're all hoofing it down the sky bridge, which is considerably longer distance than just walking outside of the Hilton, walking two parking lots over and walking into Hy-Vee Hall. But it's dry. So, you know, we're hoofing it, I don't know, a mile. I don't, it's a stretch to walk all the way down the skywalk and then walk the entire length of the convention center, overlooking the second floor, go down the second floor and then down to the first floor to where the show is, right? Now the show, it's a nice big area, plenty of room for everybody, but on both ends are the sliding walls, which means room for growth. And this show is growing. You will not see a show papered like this. I'm a fan of a lot of Joe shows. Unashamedly, unapologetically, I love cons. I love shows. I go to a lot of comic book shows. I go to a lot of G.I. Joe shows. I go to some just generalized toy shows, gaming shows, Transformers, whatever. You will not see a show papered like this show. For example, the length of the hall outside, he has all these posters, 16 posters for the 1682 run. People were trying to buy those posters to take home and trying to figure out how to take them home on a plane. The show hadn't even started. Like, because they're just that good, right? Everything is that good. So the show floor is nice. It's sizable. And then when you want to talk about the creatives there, let's start with a local. A local game shop set up three round tables in the middle of the show floor. And at two of them, they had the Renegade Games G.I. Joe card game. And at one of them, they had the role-playing game. They had scheduled times where they could take up to five people, set them down, teach them the role-playing game in about 2 hours. I sat through their Friday night run. Renegade Games, they sent out, because not in the book, but you can get it on their website for free. You can get a level 1 and a level 20 of Duke, Roadblock, Scarlet, Snake Eyes, and then a homebrewed character, Wizard. So you can kind of compare and contrast Wizard, the homebrewed, versus the standard five we all know. So that's who you get to play when you sit down at the table. I would have loved if they had gone through character creation. I think that's a harder thing to do, especially with random people in time blocks. So they didn't do that. They handed out pre-gen characters made by Renegades, and we played the game. Quick little scenario, pretty easy, pretty fun. When I sat down, they handed me Roadblock, which is awesome. That's my guy. I rolled like hell, so I was pretty ineffectual. The other two tables, because it's a collectible card game that can be played by yourself or up to four players. If you went and sat down at the table, she started showing you the game, and she was teaching the game. Every time I walked past those three tables, they were always full. You know, people were there to buy toys, see toys, hang out with their friends, get artwork. But the Codename Iowa crew brought in this gaming team, and people were excited to learn how to play the role-playing game and how to play the card game. It was awesome. I already knew how to play the card game, so I didn't sit at the table. Had A and I not been playing it for a while now, I would have. But I did sit at the role-playing game table. It was fantastic. So then we jump back to the creators you know. You know, Call Sign Longbow, their stuff is still in production. So they didn't have product at the table for us, right? But they worked with Brian and they made a sticker set. So they were giving away sticker sets. But at the table, they still had a ton of artwork, their test shots and some paint masters. They were talking to people about the paint schemes and the paint masters, the flesh tones, everything. You could really, you know, sit down with Troy and go kind of deep on the process of Call Sign Longbow coming to life. Troy is absolutely not a new person to toy design. And any question you might have had, he could answer. Any concern you might have had, he had an answer. Any praise you might have had, he's humbly accepting. The man is on point.
You know, as I said way back when, I followed his Modern Toy Mockup blog, and the way they presented the brand, their vision, their ideas, their goals, their mission statement at that panel that you and I caught. I mean, I was already impressed with him from working with, you know, a lot of the independent brands that I love. It must have been awesome. You know, we just talked about it. I can't wait for the stuff to come in. I can't wait for all the stuff that I have via Kickstarter to come in.
It's really neat. And, you know, he's right there, right across from Jody Classified. He's right beside the Codename Iowa booth, which, you know, they have some great t-shirts this year. They have patches. They have stickers. They have 3D printed stuff. They have resin things. Like, you can't imagine the level of care and that this show puts into what they're putting there, whether it's the signage or whether it's the swag you get to take home. You know, I already mentioned the fingerboards from Skeletron, but they also have their paint masters and some prototype stuff there. Their enormous Robo Skull is on the table, of course. Listening to Mark talk about designing in 3D, listening to Ben just be Ben, it's fantastic. Right beside them is Cav with the fan club. He also has some of his books, which if you don't have his 4-inch collector guides, oh, holy shit.
His attention to detail on toys is... So I've spent a lot of time with Cav, like sorting toys. And while sorting toys with him, picking his brain, just getting to know him as a collector. And this man has a wild eye for detail. I'm not going to, you know, I'll let him share his own business, but... You know, I get particular about paint apps and this and that, but like this man is on a different level. It's incredible.
Right across from him is Josh Egebean, who is the same way, but for comic books. And like the details he was talking about in different variations and runs and countries, he's talking about how the Mark Jeweler thing is starting to catch on with comic book collectors. But he was talking about that a couple years ago when he was collecting them all. And then to have book two in hand with the DDP stuff and all the interviews and everything else. Right around the corner from James, Mark didn't bring the 3D printed Optimus Prime and Motor Master that I brought home, you know, back in September. He brought a classified scale Optimus Prime with like automotive paint and like shiny shit on it. And it looked like a real semi truck. And there's a classified bat sitting inside. He brought a shark that he made that was larger than like my torso.
Damn.
The vehicle shark, not the robot shark. If it was the robot shark, I would have hit him up for purchase. You know, he had his A and B kits, which are factory made. One of the things people were going wild over was he had laser tag guns for classified scaled figures. They were 3D printed and painted. You know, the man just has cool weapons if you like 112 figures. You know, in the other corner, we've already talked about Kobe and Avax with his customizing class. But, you know, he also has a booth set up where he'll sell a few things, but he also has all of his custom stuff you could buy from him. And then right beside him, you always see him as Toy Department, but here you see him as Hypno Shield. Brian is set up with all of his like wacky magnet filled, you know, custom figures with Chuckle's shirt and Admiral Akbar's head and just... Plus, like, his dogs, his robots, his everything, man. His resin stuff and his cast things that he makes are fantastic. Probably run into these people at other shows, but you know, they're here with all the good shit, and it's so good to see, man. And that's not even hitting the vendors, right? Like, which I already talked about, like some of the crazy stuff. Codename Iowa is definitely one of those yearly pilgrimages that I've made for a while. I'm going to continue to make. It's such a good show, and you got to make it next year. You know, burn sage, do the voodoo dance, whatever you got to do to not have another house issue in November of 2023.
Before I, you know, ask you about your haul, I will say, as of today, I did solve my roofing issue. I can say that with 95% confidence. I have a nice tone to my voice because I was able to, you know, we were able to tackle it for a fraction of what I thought it was going to cost. And again, I'm saying this through the lens of like, you know, we tackled the only logical place where the issue could be happening, but life is crazy. I'm 95% confident. I'm feeling good. I'm gonna take this victory and run with it. I mean, I think also with next year, like I'm just going to have to, you know, part of the hurdle was the flights. I'm gonna have to probably just either set aside a little bit more money and just deal with it, or just drive.
Or get a cheap flight to Nashville and we'll drive together.
That's a good idea.
No, granted, I would rather fly. It's much faster. But flights were three times more expensive this year than I normally pay for them, which is why I drove. And because I drove, you know, I had room to bring a couple of things home for Todd. I could have brought home a lot more toy than I did, but this year's AR was more about paper for me. So, yeah, I brought home the gear kit, which I don't know if you guys have seen pictures of the gear kit yet, but it was a box that you stood up, popped a hole through it. It says level 3 on it. It's meant to be like level 3 of the pit. You know, hard cardboard flooring with a little walkway that comes out. And it's got a firing range, a couple obstacle course pieces. So it is perfect for level 3 of the pit training time, which is so cheesy and so issue 1, 1982 of the comic book. It is perfect. We set it up. A immediately grabbed Sergeant Slaughter, the Fridge, General Hawk, Leatherneck, and a couple other people. He starts building this setup of the Joe's training. The next day, I get up in the morning. I come in there, and he's been up. He wakes up before me. The Cobra have taken over, so there's a whole room of like Cobra troopers and officers. Cobra Commander and Major Blood are standing there. I'm like, all right, I see what you're doing. And then I look on the other side of that wall through the little doorway are the Joes. They're getting ready to retake the place. It's fantastic. It's a nice bit of G.I. Joe paraphernalia that hits all the right tones. Because I didn't pick up a lot of toy this year, I was able to bring home a test shot roadblock, the Star Brigade roadblock. Fantastic. Gorgeous. I had also picked up some other material like the Hasbro 92 Toy Fair catalog. So when you talk about like the stuff that they were doing in 92, they had one of those trace and draw. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yep.
You put the little plates in, you put the paper over it, you trace over it, and then you finish the piece. They had a G.I. Joe one. I've never seen that before. So I immediately jumped on eBay and I was like, how much are these worth? Because A is looking through this. Like Alexander and I sat down and he looked through every page of Cabbage Patch Kids, every page of, I don't remember what they're called, but the kittens, the cats who give birth to 5 or 6 kittens. Fucking wild. He looks through every page of everything. And then we get to the G.I. Joe stuff. He's naming off every figure. He names the two things that we don't have. But then when we get to like, the trace and draw stuff, he had never heard of it before because it's been gone since then, right? Like, I know I had it in the 80s. It was still going on in 92, evidently. But, you know, I remember is it a fashion thing, right? Like, my sister had some fashion ones, some Barbie ones. They still had those. They also had some greeting card ones in the 92 catalog and some other. They had an Urkel one. I had to explain who Urkel was and why high water pants, taped glasses, and a was like, what was represented as nerd, because he has a completely different relationship to the word nerd than we did growing up watching, did I do that? But they had a trace and draw, like they had a trace Urkel. And then we see the G.I. Joe one. And he was like, all right, Dad, like I kind of like that. I kind of, you know, I wouldn't mind a little bit. So I haven't gotten him one, but we did go and look at prices. And I was lucky enough to bring home a couple other things that are all in that G.I. Joe informational realm, you know, just different pieces of lore and history and data and deep dive.
There's a few paper items that at some point I will need your help acquiring. You know, everybody talks about that foreign catalog.
Yeah, Benelux. I don't have one of those. We should find those. Those are amazing.
We should find those together.
Those are very expensive now because everybody knows how amazing they are.
I should have got on that train
2 years ago.
The first time I heard it. I heard about it a little bit before that.
I wish it. So speaking of paper, the thing that I was excited to bring home the most, and so there's a bit of a funny story, right? I have my G.I. Joe sketchbook. John of Callsign Longbow, he did two drawings for me. So for G.I. Joe, he did sci-fi, and it is, oh my God, it is such a good sci-fi. It is such a good sci-fi. And then he also put in one of the Callsign figures. That also is fantastic. John can move a pencil. These two pieces are beautiful. I loved them. I am so very excited to have them in the book. But I needed it for Codename Iowa because Ron Wagner's there. Ron sets up table, he opens shop, he calls open for business, and I crack that bitch open. And I'm like, hey, would you do a page? I said, you know, I'm looking at his rates for like his headshots and his full body shots on 9.5 by 12 or by 9 by 12, right? And I'm like, I'll pay the full 9 by 12 body shot rate for you to do a page in this. And he was like, that's not going to be necessary. But because it's a book, I don't want to really draw that small right now. So I'm just going to do a headshot. Who do you want? So far, everybody in here is somebody that you like to draw. But I also know that Ron he's very upfront about the fact that, you know, he's been in comics for years. He's been in other things for years. And he doesn't remember these characters the way you and I remember them. So I say Bazooka because the mustache at least is a more defining feature than square-jawed white dude. He laughs. You know, there's a few other people there. Everybody's talking, throwing out ideas, whatever. And he's handing out commissions that he did at home before the show that people were waiting on. And I'm not going to talk about what they are because those people have already posted online. They are phenomenal. All of them were beautiful. One of them was mind-blowing. But he's like, all right, I got it. And I walk away. And I come back like 3 hours later because I'm not pressuring this man. I got shit to do. I went and learned how to play the role-playing game. I talked to some people. I made my rounds. I show back up. He did not do Bazooka. He did the Baroness. It is a fantastic Baroness. It's just a headshot. So you know how I feel about the Baroness. I want the Baroness in my book very badly. I don't want sexy Boobs McGee Baroness. I want a cool classic Baroness, yes. Or like a hard street stomping Baroness. But I could do without like sex kitten Baroness. It's just not my speed. I've seen it. The artwork's out there. It's great. If that's what you're into, bully. That's not what I wanted. And so he did a head sketch of Baroness, and it's classic 70s, 80s comic book style Baroness glasses. I adore it. Now, the funny part to this is that sitting beside Ron is Mark II Designs, who we've now mentioned like 17 times. Mark, on his right arm, has a tattoo of the cover of the comic book where Serpentor is in the hiss tank and the Baroness is tied to the front of it. Ron made that cover. And so I don't know if Mark pointed out himself or if somebody pointed out to Ron, but while Ron's showing me the Baroness, the next thing I know, he's handing me the Baroness and grabbing Mark and be like, I did this arm. But those three pieces, I think for me, even with the pre-production stuff and the Toy Fair catalog and the little magazines and all the paper that I brought home, that very much touches my archivist, historian, deep dive, need to have knowledge, need to be more than a consumer. As much as it touches all of that, The three pieces of art were my favorite thing that I got. And so before I left Des Moines, I grabbed the McKees and I handed Troy my book. The Joe sketchbook continues to travel the country.
Definitely one of my favorite aspects of your collecting. I mean, I'm completely impressed with your paper side of collecting across every media, not just our brand, just in general. But when we first got to know each other, the concept of this like traveling book is like genius. That's the first time I had heard of it because, you know, like I said, I was a lurking guy, kind of hung in the back. Most of the stuff I dug into and was actively trying to engage in was just toy talk. So it's I get this like rush of excitement when you're showing me pages or we're talking about it. I mean, you know, anytime you travel to a convention where there's artists, there's generally a conversation either on here or privately that follows this. And it's always this like interesting scavenger hunt for me that ends up with you having like incredible artwork by like fans, creators, everybody. It's such a good.
So let me swing around the table one more time because there's two people I haven't talked about yet. Kling and Smith. So Dan shows up. Dan has not been to AR before. Book 9 and 10 have funded on Kickstarter of his Creating Joe's book. This man, he brought a Detolf of 82 pre-production stuff to honor the theme of this show. Brother. Whoo! The molds for Cobra Commander, two up pieces, Grunt and everybody else. Some pre-production Scarlet stuff. It was... And he also brought the sample copies of 9 and 10. And so, of course, you know, Jay, I brought the sample copies. You going to flip through them? Or do you have to be a purist and wait till you get your copies at home? Oh, Dan, you're killing me. So, of course, you know, no. I'm going to wait. You know, I got him coming to the house. I'm going to read every page. And he goes, oh, I know you read every page. We've had this conversation. You've surprised me with what you've read in my books. Well, you put it on paper. Somebody's got to read it. Might as well be me. But I couldn't do it, man. I broke. I went over and I flipped through his books. They're so good. Right beside Dan is Ron Rudat. You know how much I adore Ron and Jenny. Jenny didn't come. Tristan came. And I met Tristan in 2018, I think. Maybe it was 2019. I don't know. It was pre-COVID. It was a long time ago. We don't know each other. We hung out once. So it was like, oh, I recognize you and I recognize you, right? We got to hang out again. He's awesome to talk to. And I enjoy talking to Ron as well. Ron and I start talking about an Operation Recall. I kind of dropped it on him. I said, you know, like Alexander was disappointed when Ron wasn't doing Ron interrupted me. He says, well, you know, Mark is a great. And I said, no, I know Mark is a great designer. Hold on. Alexander was disappointed because he knows Ron. He was excited that Ron could work on his character. So, but when I sat down and I showed him the characters that Mark worked on, then he was excited that he gets to learn and meet and understand this other designer that he doesn't know. And so Ron was like, oh, that's amazing. It's very cool. You and I have talked about this on here more than once. I've talked about this with Carson on here. But to be able to talk to Ron about it, and we talked about some of the characters that he's working on and like some of his favorite aspects. It was very nice to just catch up yet again this year with Mr. Rudat. Have I overwhelmed yet? Do I need to give more to convince people to come to this show?
I mean, I was already convinced before the tragedy of my roof, but tragedy is a playful word. I don't want to paint a picture that isn't true. But well, I was going to roll it into you came home to two of the most anticipated classified figures to date with the Sarge, and almost as elusive as the real Tiger Force Outback. Now, let me rephrase in terms of real, but like, all right, the original Tiger Force Outback in the States seems to be about as elusive as the classified one at this point.
Hey, got super excited. You know, I got more than one Sarge because Sarge is his guy. So there's a sealed classified with his other sealed Sarge stuff. And then, of course, there's an open Sarge that he's been playing with. He has been able to put that Sarge in some great poses with the Skeletron fingerboard. Because it was all like aerial stuff, he broke out the Mezco stands, which then he broke out Mezco, and then he broke out Mezco and the Sarge and Tiger Force Outback all running around together. It became a fun little week.
I have seen absolutely nothing but the highest praise for Classified Sarge.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Across people in our community, across people who are just 6-inch toy collectors. I don't have the nostalgia bug for Sarge based on my age. Put off getting the 4-inch SDCC Sarge for years until the price went through the roof. And then somehow this Joe Fest, I came home with both variants. Who the hell am I?
A masochist.
When they announced the Sarge, and I showed the prototypes and everything, I remember texting you, and I think I just called you and was like, because this is pre-Joe Fest, this is pre-me getting the 4-inch, I called you and I was like, I'm really excited for this Sarge figure.
Well, like, you know, A is doing backflips.
Oh, of course.
So he has asked multiple times, like, when's it going to be here? It's an incredible figure. It really is. And it comes with an AK-47, assault rifle, whatever. It comes with a machine gun of some demarcation. It also comes with his baton. So I was like, well, shit, that's cool to me, man. That's one more rifle for anybody. But also, it's good in the Sarge's hands. And Tiger Force Outback is just as good. You know, as much as I was meh on the twins, their face sculpts are amazing. Don't get me wrong. But Tomax and Zaymot at 6-inch is a little boring, whereas at 3¾, they're very interesting. But there's this new wave of classified, you know, you have Sergeant Slaughter, Tiger Force Outback, Stalker. Their face sculpts and their bodies are just, they're looking a little more, and they're feeling good. I like them.
I talked to you a couple months ago and kind of classified for me, I will buy everything as a collector, and I have, it's like a bit of a roller coaster for me. So like, you know, sometimes I'll be excited. I opened up the Snake Eyes and Timber 2-pack. I haven't opened up a classified figure in a long time.
If A wasn't playing with them, I would probably buy one of each out of rote, but I wouldn't be necessarily excited by them because it's not my scale. Alexander plays with them, and I have to admit, they're kind of beautiful pieces of toy. As much as I hate to say it, because I don't want to be a 6-inch guy. But then again, I have Mezco.
Watching them kind of figure out what they're doing together and how they gel together.
Who they are as a team, yeah.
And the progress, I compared it to the 25th. Privately, we had this big, long, like, you know, overdramatic conversation about toys, which is what we do.
It's very serious business.
Looking back as a line evolves, it's easy to look at this. This is, you know, it's easy to pick things apart. And I've really enjoyed watching the evolution of what they're doing, you know, from like a scale perspective. And I'm saying within like the accessories, like getting closer and closer and closer to looking more and more realistic scale wise. Because that's always the trick with sheaths and holsters and scabbards and anything that holds something in a toy. And this goes for budget lines to super high-end boutique lines. It is a very, very tricky thing to do in both scales that I collect, 4 and unfortunately now 6. It's hard to not have stuff look boxy and chunky. And again, when you're in a mainline setting, there's safety regulations. You can't turn out something to the mass that is so delicate that you have to essentially be like, well, this is, you know, I...
Yeah, you can't do it where Mezco sends out a sheet that says, don't touch it if you're not 15 or older.
Yes. So I can't wait to get Outback. And not just because he's been delayed for a really long time and whatever, but like... And I also just love the character Outback. But that figure, I remember clear as day when they announced it, when he went up. You know, that was a very weird day for me because, you know, it was the 4-inch line is dead. Here's O-ring. But I remember looking at what they were doing with the Outback and being like they're starting to hit their stride. And now considering, you know, it was a year ago, it's very refreshing.
In hand, the new Tiger Force symbol is still very collegiate and it lacks the charm of the UK Tiger Force at 3¾ scale. However, you do have to kind of admit, sadly, I hate doing it, but that t-shirt at 6-inch scale is going to be a little weird. It needs a little something at the 6-inch. Kind of like we just said with Tomex and Amon. It just needs a little oomph at the 6-inch, at the 6-inch scale. And so the collegiate symbol fits better with the scale, even though it lacks the charm of the original. That said, everything else about that figure is amazing. And I am very much looking forward to getting a white shirt out back and giving him a white haired head.
I'm excited to see that.
I mean, everybody's going to do it, I'm sure. Like, I'm not the only one.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.